Hello, everybody. My name is Ron, and this is Ron's Gadget Talk for Tuesday, 22nd of December, 2020. I think by the time you probably listen to it, it's Wednesday. But oh well, that's not really the problem. Aside from that, we have plenty of things to talk about. It's obviously one of our kind of our last episodes of hopefully second last episode of this year of 2020. Obviously, Thursday's episode will kind of recap 2020 and obviously talk a little bit. And obviously answer y'all's questions and sort of we'll just be a bit casual kind of and all that good stuff. But aside from that, really, that's interesting. Aside from that, we have still even with the year ending, we still have plenty of things to talk about, including the Note 20, sorry, the S21 series that's about to come out. There's more things that have been leaked about the S21. We have probably the latest bit of news really has been the pricing of the S21. So according to Roland Quant, good old Roland Quant from WinFuture, a famous German blog, they claim now they have the pricing for the S21 series in full. So let's just find out how much it will cost literally. So as it stands, according to the good folks at WinFuture, the S21 series, here probably the prices that they claim will be. The first thing they're claiming is that the S21 model basic tier, the basic S21, regular S21, will still be available in a 4G variant. But aside from that, all S21 devices or SKUs that are going to be available around the world, pretty much in except for places where 5G is still not available, will all have 5G capability. This is kind of to compete with the iPhone, and obviously there was a recent analyst report that the iPhone 12 literally was the most popular 5G phone in the world within a few weeks of launching, which I think speaks to the power of Apple. Nothing much really to point out, but that's interesting. All right, but let's just get to the juicy part. The S21, the regular tier, basic tier, 128 gigabyte variant will start from 849 euros. All prices are in Europe, euros. For double the storage, you could pay 50 euros extra. That's 899 for an S21 256 gigabyte variant. And then the S21 Plus base tier is 1049 euros. And then the S21 Ultra base tier also starts from 1349 euros. And then essentially then the for double storage you pay 50 euros extra down the alley. So that's kind of interesting to see what's happening here. So you pay 50 euros extra for double the storage. It's a bit of a good deal if you ask me, kind of. But the S21, I mean, not bad. About 850 euros. I mean, it's getting a bit competitive with a lot of a lot of other models that are going to cost this much. We're talking iPhones and your OnePluses because those phones also exist, and Realme's and Xiaomi phone, Xiaomi phones and stuff. You have those options in Europe. So, 850 starting price for the S21 is a little competitive, to be honest. The S21 Ultra, now the maxed out S21 Ultra Balzer, 512 gigabytes of storage, everything, all specs added in, will set you back 1,529 euros out of the gate. So that's interesting. Do note these prices will vary. This actual price doesn't include taxes or any other charges, so the actual final price may be a little higher or a little lower. So just check by the time the phone kind of comes out. But this is probably how much you'd expect to pay out of the gate day one when you're buying the S21. And obviously, S21 will be rolling out in January 20, obviously later in January next month, which is essentially next year. So definitely a phone to look forward to. It's kind of interesting how Samsung essentially have priced the phones a bit competitively. They're not pushing a new price tag, more like they're trying to make sure that people who probably are upgrading or are looking at other options that they do end up going for Samsung. So it's everything's been leaked about the S21, the specs, the camera, the wallpapers, the phone, the back of the phone, the prices, the processor. There's a lot we know about these phones now. Here's the more interesting parts. There's the phones, and then there's other Samsung products. Oops. So Samsung, it will essentially be doing an event on January 6th called First Look 2021. Now, as I said, I'll probably want to mention here, We're not dropping any episodes next week, and probably the week after next week. So for the next 2 weeks, won't have any episodes. We'll kind of be back before the S21's launch. Let's see if I could check my calendar here and right on the screen. Will it come? Yes. So essentially, no new episode of our podcast by January 12th. So yeah, I mean. Anyways, we'll kind of the week after this event, we'll probably mention what happened at this one. But this is this first look 2021. I'm guessing this is a online event in lieu of CES not happening in 2021. In fact, the CES has gone virtual kind of to an extent, or I don't know if they're gonna do that. So instead, Samsung is throwing a little 2021 event showcasing the TVs for that year. So what to expect? They're obviously going to talk a whole lot about micro LED and mini LED displays, quantum dot displays, and much, much more that Samsung's been putting a lot of work into. There's no mention of the phones. That's obviously at another event, obviously the following week, literally the following week. So that's interesting. And then on top of that, and then another Samsung device was leaked on top of the phones. And obviously, we had this event we're having for the TVs. And that is for the Galaxy Book, the Chromebook, Samsung's own Chromebook. They're making another one. And essentially, good old Ivan Blass leaked out photos of the kind of the up forthcoming Galaxy Book device. I kind of don't know the name of it. I think I've seen the name somewhere. I just have to find it. If you give me a second here, and it was, you know, if the name's written somewhere, that is. I mean, that is, can't it come any faster? I'll just have to Google this. Hang on, just bear with me. And they called it the Galaxy Chromebook 2. That the pictures kind of got leaked out, and it has this kind of this kind of two-in-one design convertible, if you call it, and it comes in this interesting set of colors, including this almost orangey, reddish kind of color, which is fascinating, to say the least. But that's not the one leak that I want to talk about. That we've been hearing a bit more about the Galaxy Buds Pro, and that got leaked with the S21 itself. But they've added an interesting feature, apparently, according to, again, big, do you, all right, where do we have it? Essentially, what's happened here is that there was an APK teardown, and sort of a leak from Samsung's Galaxy Store has revealed that the Galaxy Buds Pro can do 3D spatial audio on top of passive, obviously on top of noise cancellation, passive and active noise cancellation. So it can do 3D spatial audio. Unfortunately, it will only work with Samsung's smartphones running Android 11. It simulates a sound system, changing the direction of where audio is coming from based on the direction of your head and position of the phone. It's similar to what Apple's done with the AirBuds Pro and the Max. Those have the virtual surround sound. It is really amazing. I haven't tried virtual surround. It's been a thing. The difference with this though is that it involves the phone. It's all right. So the good old fo so a Reddit user, Gamer Omega with a zero on O, has spotted this pre-release APK while skimming through Samsung's Galaxy Store servers, and includes detailed information about all the new features that Samsung will offering his next gen earbuds. So we've seen how it would look like. We know what it would kind of do, noise cancellation aside from that, better noise can act active noise cancellation. So it'll do 3D spatial, so it'll do spatial 3D audio with head tracking, voice and conversation detection, turn the volume down automatically when the earbuds detect a conversation, left right hearing adjustment, noise controls, so you can do an ambient note sound mode and ANC mode. And the dreadfully funny Bigsby voice wake up sensor, because why the hell not? We need Bigsby in our lives, Hannah. Yeah, I mean, think about it, right? Who? Man, I love Bigsby, said no one literally ever since the beginning of time, since the eternity of time. You could see my hatred for Bigsby. I just don't get why Samsung is pushing Bigsby after all this time. I mean, oh well. So, but the fact that this could come with 3D spatial audio, I think this makes it a bit of a pro, a bit of Samsung's answer to I'd say a bit of Samsung's answer to the AirBuds Pro. The AirPods Pro, sorry, I said the AirBuds. Yikes. The AirPods Pro. So that's interesting to say the least. So kind of excited for what Samsung's bringing to the table. Plenty of things to talk about. Plenty of things that are happening. It's about to happen. So yeah, genuinely psyched. We have one of the first Android flagships of the year. I can't wait to see where this can go from here, to say the least. A whole galaxy of new devices. Genuinely cannot wait, that's for sure. All right, so we've talked about Samsung, so now let's just kind of talk about OnePlus. We've been hearing a lot about what OnePlus has been up to. There are obviously tons of new phones, and they're gonna have the OnePlus 9 coming out, more Nord phones. I think OnePlus Nord has been a bit of a hit for OnePlus. It's kind of brought in the market for their products and their phones. So I think when it comes to Nord, really, I think the Nord N100 and N10, that's not the last we're gonna see, as I earlier said. So there's obviously gonna be more 2021. We're probably gonna see tons of Nord phones. Until then, we've got a concept from OnePlus. It's very interesting. I mean, if you look at the pictures, it's just crazy. It's just straight from the future, that's for sure. I mean, that seems like they're tinkering around with what they can do with these phones. So this is the OnePlus 8T concept, and this is different from the regular OnePlus 8T. In it, on the back with all the cameras, it has a millimeter wave radar system that can transmit and receive electromagnetic waves, and this lets the radar system perceive, image, locate, and track objects. It can do this at millimeter level and works in any lighting condition in a way an optical time of flight system may not. Essentially, so you have a millimeter wave sensor that's on the camera, that's with the camera sensor, and essentially the difference, obviously, with this is a special OnePlus 8T. The back has this unique back cat pattern. The back glass is etched in a way to mimic the shape of the pack of the and get this sentencing, the Pamukkale hot spring terraces in Turkey. An idea essentially how it is that the film contains metal oxide and can change its colors based on different voltages, right, on different applied voltages by changing the valence state of the metal ions. The film can change its color from silver to a dark blue and back, which is interesting. So it's kind of a concept. This reminds me of something. Earlier in 2020, when 2020 kind of started and we knew it wasn't going to be this disastrous year as we thought of, OnePlus obviously showed off a OnePlus 7 T McLaren edition, and an interesting part, it had this, and the camera sensors pretty much disappeared into the it disappeared essentially, and it kind of and then it appeared back up through software, you know. And so it was an interesting technology, and it was a unique concept ahead of its time. This is really cool. I'm sure that it had this ready for like CES and stuff, but obviously, well, just one of those things that wasn't able to happen because obviously events like CES have been cancelled, obviously in the wake of what's happened around us. But interesting things, they showed it off and shared it with everyone on social media. So it is a cool concept. Obviously, the things that I've talked about here, obviously it'll take a good while for them to bring to the phone. About the LiDAR, about the millimeter wave radar, that's interesting. Again, I'll probably say this straight off the bat. LiDAR is interesting, and LiDAR essentially could be a bit more mainstream, but yeah, I mean, it's interesting what you have here, and also the back sort of is really cool. But obviously, I mean, it'll be obviously this is just a concept, and I think this is what they could possibly do if they had the resources and if they could make it a reality, then that's probably what's gonna happen. So that there goes your OnePlus 8T concept. I mean, it's based off OnePlus 8T, but they've added a whole lot of things to it to make it cool. So that's that, to say the least. And then there's Xiaomi. Now they are not showing off any concepts. They're just cutting straight to the chase and really revealing in their newest flagship, the Mi 11. Obviously, the Mi 11 is significant as it's one of the first flagship phones to feature the Snapdragon 888. which is obviously would be one of the first. Obviously, they could wait till 2021 to properly announce and obviously set bring it to sale. But now, I mean, they got to get it out by 2020. So essentially, the Mi 11 will be revealed on December 28th at 7:30 p.m. Obviously Chinese time, which is a couple hours from here. So essentially, probably afternoon Pakistan time, technically, if the time zones are all correct. So apparently, Xiaomi is obviously planning to show off the Mi 11 in full, and obviously it will hopefully go on sale by then. Obviously, soon. Obviously, after that, afterwards, obviously, by early 2021. I'm sure this is for them a way to beat the S21 and other potentially competitive devices that are about to come out. Obviously, Xiaomi's rivals in the same sort of valley, sort of Oppo, have flagships with the 888 ready to be dropped early next year, like the Find X3 and stuff, and the Realme Race, which is what it's codenamed. So I think Xiaomi's kind of going to jump the gun and sort of be like, oh, we're the first with a flagship phone, the Mi 11. So that's pretty interesting, to say the least. We're already talking about phones, high-end phones kind of been launching. Well, Apple is obviously looking a whole lot forward past phones and stuff. I mean, we've kind of been hearing for a while that Apple is out to make us their own electric car, or essentially their own self-driving car, depending on how you see it. I think it's going to be electric car, first of all. And obviously, then it's a self-driving car, theoretically. But a new exclusive report from Reuters is quoting that, again, according to people familiar with the matter, claiming that Apple could have their own car by 2024 that can obviously drive itself and obviously be electric. So Reuters has kind of broken the story that essentially that Apple has progressed enough that it now aims to build a vehicle for consumers. Two people familiar with the effort said, asking not to be named, obviously, you know why. Apple's goal of building a personal vehicle for the mass market contrasts with rivals such as Alphabet Inc.'s Waymo, which has built robo-taxis to carry passengers for a driverless ride-hailing service. Obviously, this is what we're talking about, Google and Uber and stuff, and how Google and Uber are looking about ride-hailing, so this is a bit more environmentally friendly. If you could have a whole bunch of robo-taxis, you click a button, it's at your step, and it would be a bit more sustainable. But obviously, Apple instead is looking for a personal vehicle that anyone can buy, and you'd love to have an Apple car. But interesting, but obviously, interestingly enough, it's kind of talked in depth about what Apple could do. Now, we could first of all teeter tat on the fact that it could essentially be, it could probably be a whole electric car that can drive itself, or a whole software, you could say a whole kit or a software. Sort of a kit to make any car drive itself, obviously using Apple's, you know, software and services. So as for the first possibility, which is essentially building an entire car, Apple, obviously behind the scenes, Apple's doing a lot of R&D work from the looks of it. They have poached a lot of engineers from Tesla, which is interesting. Aside from that, that's not really the point to talk about, but it kind of is. They're looking to use, and obviously, with terms of technology, it's interesting what they're looking to use. For self-driving, they need a lot of sensors and very specific technology to enable self-driving instantly. So Apple is obviously looking to use a lot of LiDAR sensors. Now, they already have LiDAR sensors for the iPhone and the iPads. That has like a single LiDAR sensor, and that does wonders for those devices. But obviously, Apple is obviously looking to build sort of their own grid of sensors for the car to enable self-driving. As for the battery, and this is where it gets interesting, Apple, and I will quote Reuters here, Apple plans to use a unique monocell design that bulks up the individual cells in the battery and frees up space inside the battery pack by eliminating pouches and modules that hold battery materials, one of the people said. So, and then they will go on and on to explain the fact that Apple's design means that more active material can be packed inside the battery, giving the car potentially longer range. Apple's also examining a chemistry, for the battery called LFP, or lithium iron phosphate, a pretty different makeup of battery. I'd say a different chemical mix of for the battery instead of lithium or lead acid, which is the more popular option. There's lithium ion, and then there's lead acid. And now you have lithium iron phosphate. According to this report, which is inherently less likely to overheat and is thus safer than other types of lithium-ion batteries. And obviously, as it's talking, it's according to the person in question, quoting here, it's next level, like the first time you saw the iPhone. It'll be so revolutionary. Don't know what they said when the iPhone came out. But the interesting situation is that obviously they are looking for, obviously Apple is obviously looking to make a car. Now the challenge, obviously it'll be quite a challenge, because electric cars are not like smartphones that you can just, you know how all the parts go together, you find someone who can assemble it like Foxconn, you put it together, if the quality fit, and it's off the races and all that kind of stuff. And obviously you look at the competition for EV cars, and those companies have had a big struggle trying to essentially offer a rock solid, trying to build out rock solid cars and make them in such enough volume and scale and speed to compete with equally with established car makers like Toyota or say Volkswagen. Those folks have had completely straightforward if you think about it, the traditional car makers have an edge right now because until they know how to manufacture cars at dramatic speed and scale, and how to scale production when needed, and so efficientize everything. And obviously other and the newer players and newer kids on the block are learning to sort of opt to speed up. So they have also added that point that this is the biggest challenge for Apple to make a car, obviously, is the whole production situation. It's not like making iPhones or iPads or Macs that you know what parts to use and you know where to get stuff from, and you just have to put it together. You have to tell somebody to put it together and then send it to you. Cars are different ball and a whole other ballpark altogether. I feel like Apple could do it, but it's a whole lot more effort. It's a whole effort to get the self-driving up and going, whole the effort to design, and then obviously to make the car as elegant as possible. They could do it. I mean, and obviously the software, and then there is the manufacturing. The manufacturing is the real problem. I mean, I feel like now if Apple's able to ship so many cars, if Apple's able to succeed in making not just electric cars, but also get people to buy them and people actually get them, and obviously the self-driving works, and I think I would probably be like, okay, Apple could do vehicles, that this could be another big failure. It could be a big gamble. I think in terms of like far into the future device or hard device segments that Apple could blow up or succeed if they try. If I had to pick electric cars, AR glasses, I think AR glasses have a better, I think I bet that AR glasses could work, they could succeed, instead of, say, electric cars, because electric cars are a risky proposition. There's a lot behind those, there's a lot of work behind them, and it probably takes more resources than making phones, probably, because there's a lot that goes behind the scenes that we don't see in cars. I mean, you see so many cars on the road, but there are a lot of folks, there's a lot of staff, a lot of labor, a lot of manufacturing, a lot of parts gone into the car, a lot of jobs with it, everything. And so it's a lot more effort. And obviously, they're talking about cars, which are some of the most essential tools that humanity probably uses around the world. And so if you want to make it at such a mass scale and make a lot of money, I mean, you'll have to, I mean, and honestly, jokes aside, obviously, how Apple car will be costing so much money, it'll be very expensive. It won't be cheap, really. But still, you'll have to match the efficiency and speed and production power of, say, Mercedes-Benz or Porsche, or those kind of luxury car brands that are mainstream, like Audi or Porsche. Those are, I think, the next best examples that we have, the German car makers. They're luxurious, but they're mainstream to an extent. Like everyone, every other person on Earth has those luxury cars, and probably Tesla. You'll have to get to that level of production and speed of doing things. They could do it, but it'll be a lot of work. But even, so, also, and according to the same sources they claim, in order to have a viable assembly plant, you need 100,000 vehicles annually with more volume to come, which is That's where the challenge is, you know. So if they could able to make it, then that's interesting. I mean, who knows? Possibly, if they can't get cars made, so an investor has suggested, sort of a investor to looking at all this has kind of added this interesting suggestion. So Trip Miller, a managing partner at Apple's key investor, Gullane Capital Partners. Probably he was quoted as saying, "It would seem to me that if Apple develops some advanced operating system or battery technology, it would be best utilized in a partnership with an existing manufacturer under license. As we see with Tesla and the legacy auto companies, having a very complex manufacturing network around the globe doesn't happen overnight." But then I kind of feel that Apple's profit margins and the fact they have such excessive bulk of cash ready to be spent, I mean, a whole lot of things, more R&D and say more content production costs and stuff. Like, they know where to spend their money now. They just need a smart way to put the money in and then make more money off it. I mean, they could do it. I mean, this report is probably the strongest indication that they could make a car. But honestly, I'd tell you what's more likely would be that they could make AR glasses, and then that'd be available in the next couple of years, probably by the time they get around to making a car. I mean, it's a lot more effort. And also, it'd be a bit of a paradigm shift for Apple, the brand, because we all know that Apple's kind of has evolved, has gone to other product segments like smartwatches and all that kind of stuff. But the thing is that smartwatches, obviously, maybe a little bit of a different segment, but also they're a bit different in experience. You try, sort of, it's a different experience to sell them, theoretically. They've tried that actually. They built sort of boutiques in department stores. That's kind of how they sold. But then they realized that smartwatches became popular, so they stopped doing that. That discontinued. They continued to sell the Apple Watches, but the Apple stores, because that's where you buy Apple stuff. Who knows? Maybe, who knows? Maybe the thing is that electric cars are different from regular cars. They're like smartphones or smart bulbs or God knows, wearables. It's just like buying a smartphone. We're all accustomed to experience. You buy it online, you buy it in something like an Apple store. So by the time Apple gets around to making the first Apple cars, it'll probably be that experience. But I kind of feel that Apple, if they're gonna make cars, it'd be a little bit like the Apple Watch. Like, they'll have so many models, they'll have collaborations with unique designers, and I'm sure they're gonna do something related, a bit specific to cars in general. It would just be bananas, frankly. But then also part of me thinks that I don't think Apple's it will I don't think if Apple is able to create good battery or self-driving technology or a good sort of car OS, I don't think they're gonna be willing to share that technology with a traditional car maker. And traditional car makers have good technological prowess. I think it'd be stupid for them to just share it. I mean, if they could just share the OS, if all we want to see them is share the OSs, why haven't we seen Macs on Asus laptops? Asus laptops are good, but why haven't we seen Macs on them? Mac OS, sorry. Why haven't we seen Mac OS on Asus laptops or on Surfaces? Why have we seen Apple-made laptops? So there's a reason behind making the software and then the features, and then there's the hardware and then there's the services. You gotta run the whole ecosystem. You can't give it off to a third-party product all that easily. It just doesn't work. It's not in Apple's nature. It's not their nature to do it. So yeah, I think probably by the time that we get around to seeing this car actually out in exist, we don't even know how it would look like exactly, but it would look hella interesting. I mean, it'd be a little rad though, honestly. It'd probably I mean, part of me feels like it's gonna cost just as much as a Mercedes S-Class. Like, they're gonna try to get the mar that market where people buy Mercedes-Benz cars or Audis, you know, because those like premium, but they're mainstream. Apple could eat up that. So if Apple actually is getting on to making their own cars, those brands should be watching out really seriously. This could be a serious disruption. I mean, traditional watchmakers, traditional phone brands, God knows what have all felt the disruption when Apple enters the market. Cars would be a bigger paradigm shift. I mean, but then part of me is like, it's so challenging to make cars, so they could do it, they may not do it, you never know really. So that's that. So as I said, so yeah, Finally, I think it's this straightforward. We'd probably want to talk about this though. The best apps of 2020, the best applications that one can run out to an app store and download and can essentially use them to, I mean, for their own liking. I mean, the best apps of 2020. This past year, it's been obviously a tough year. I think without these, we wouldn't have gone through 2020 this quickly. Thankfully, it's over. Obviously, in the next episode, we'll probably mention our favorite sort of devices and phones, sort of, because I think, and obviously recap 2020 and obviously talk about looking forward to next year. So that's pretty much a bit of next episode. But there are five, not five even, I think the favorite apps of 2020, I think in my own opinion, are probably Zoom and Google Meet first comes to mind. Those are, I'd say those two apps, and obviously Microsoft Teams if you use Microsoft services a lot, but Google Meet and Zoom, I think are some of the, are probably the best apps of 2020. I think those apps have defined this past year for all of us where we are really. I mean, Zoom especially, and Google Meet to an extent. I mean, our family gatherings, you could say virtual weddings, concerts, conferences, get-togethers, parties, classes, everything. Essentially, when people wanted to come together and they couldn't do it because of because of social distancing and stuff, you just got onto Zoom, typed in that code, put the passcode in, and we just pressed Alt A and Alt V, and we could see each other for the first time in a long, long time. And I think, and then obviously Google Meet is a similar service, but from Google, those services are quite sentimental of 2020, essentially. There are a whole lot of, obviously, this past year, video streaming, e-commerce have seen a tremendous rise in consumption. Like, a lot of people are streaming and or buying online than ever before, but, well, and then after that, really, after, I think, and then one app really took off and we hit the mainstream, and I think I started using it a lot more often than once. That's obviously TikTok. And after this, say all you will about its content or how cringy it is, but I think that app has had its cultural moment this year, all over the world really. In Pakistan, for a quick second, I'd say, for probably most of summer, it experienced a ban, and a lot of people loved it, a lot of people hated it. I don't know what your opinion is on that. It depends on how you see things, but and then obviously it almost got banned in the US, but it still hasn't kind of happened. So obviously it's quite a sentimental service, and it's seen its moment this year. It's really blown up. Obviously TikTokers have crossed over into other mediums, you know, they've become big YouTubers and big TV stars, you know, and stuff. I mean, the D'Amelio sisters, the most popular TikTokers around, will get a reality show on Hulu. Now, who knew that was gonna, who knew TikTokers would get their own reality show? That's bananas. So TikTok has its moment this year. A lot of the trends have kind of been shaped by this little app. You know the challenge with the cranberry juice dude. He kind of, you know, goes down. He's obviously on his longboard, drinking cranberry juice, all lip synced to Dreams by Fleetwood Mac. So you can say an app like TikTok has its cultural moment this year, and it's now kind of in our popular culture. You can't really run away from it. It's there. You can't, you kind of have to, like, you know, embrace it. Again, I think a lot of people, it's a whole lot of people still are probably not use the app because it's still a whole lot cringy, but you gotta get past the cringiness, if you know what I mean. And then obviously there are other apps like Disney Plus, which is obviously a whole video streaming service, I know. It has all everything from the House of Mickey Mouse. Obviously, it's not really, still not available in some parts of the world, obviously, like Africa or the Middle East, or obviously, so probably the whole of South Asia, or most parts of Asia, outside of India and Japan and South Korea. In those three countries, Disney Plus is available completely, but obviously, the rest of Asia, it's still not available, so, you know, it kind of doesn't make sense, but, you know, it's become a solid option to Netflix. And obviously has tons of popular shows and stuff. And then obviously you talk about if you mention games as an app, I'd say Among Us. That's, I would say, one of the top apps of 2020. That thing that blew up like bananas, and the fact that on top of being a PC game, obviously it was streamed a lot on Twitch, it's also a mobile game. And I tell you, a lot of me and probably our relatives, we just got online and played a few set tons of sessions of Among Us, and it was very fun. Pretty sus, but yeah, it was very, very fun. And then obviously, 2020 isn't really 2020 about the fact that obviously we've gone through so much as in this year. And so I'd probably quickly wanna, so I've mentioned those probably favorite apps of mine, but I'll quickly shout out three different apps that, and then the last two of them essentially were award-winning. So Google Play's best app of 2020 has been Luna. This app essentially helps in is a bit of a meditation app, so it helps you sleep, get to sleep nicely. So gets you in the right mood to sleep. So if you go stressed out, you just watch and listen to things, and it make you sleep and all that stuff. And then Apple and then Apple's own Apple did its own App Store award, and the iPhone app of the year 2020 is Wakeout. Is this app made by a small developer, and essentially lets you do plenty of exercises and routines, workouts. And I think if this pandemic's told us anything, we need plenty of exercise to keep us all healthy and stuff. So that was fun. And obviously, finally, I think I don't have to mention this, but I probably had to bring it here, the Calm app. I haven't used the Calm app, but all I know is that it calms you down. It soothes you, and what you hear and see, it calms you down. I think this past year has been quite stressful, and I think the big shout out to apps like Calm and stuff, fitness and wellness apps probably deserve a big shout out, just like gaming and other apps, because obviously they've probably helped us get through such a tough year. Let's just hope 2021 is obviously a whole lot better than this. And aside from that was the show. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know. Follow me on let me know on Twitter and Instagram. Follow me there at Said underscore my own 99, and obviously follow me on TikTok at the same ID. So I didn't think I would say that, but oh well. Subscribe to the show where we listen to podcasts. Aside from that, until Thursday, this is your boy Malin signing up. Hope you have a great day, and I hope you obviously have a great 2021, because we all need, let's just hope the next year is better than the last, you know, or that some things do happen from your side. Like, I don't know, you get richer, you get happier, or something better happens, or you get at home, or I don't know what. Hope you're in a better place than this past year, right? Stay safe, stay happy, till the next episode, or I mean till next time. Ciao, peace. Thanks for listening.